Okay, hi guys.
Recording. Hi, my name is Todd Adams. I'm with Zen Parenting Radio. This is Zen Talk number 70.
You don't really need to do all that. Something.
But somebody, if they're listening, they want to know what number it is.
Okay, Millie.
But Millie's on with Tim, who's muted. Millie, tell me if I should unmute him or what? Because I can't.
You could probably unmute him, and you can join in and add.
All right, okay. I'm unmuting. So Millie, just jump right in. Go ahead and jump.
So. This is regarding one of our twin 7-year-old sons that I have brought up here before. Over the summer, I know I brought up the fact that he seems to be overly sensitive to criticism. Criticism is kind of a hard word. We don't criticize as much as we give him feedback, right? Mm-hmm. And when he's doing something that isn't appropriate. And I will add, most of the time we are coming to him above the line, mm-hmm. right? Okay. Because we realize if we come below the line, okay. So he has a very hard time with boundaries and impulse control. Now we figure, that's age. He's 7. He might be age related. His brother, on the other hand, is very different and very good about controlling himself. But that's okay. And then I think I also brought up over the summer that my suspicion is that he is not very confident. And so he may feel, I get the sense that maybe he doesn't have so much control at school. Like he's got friends probably that tell him what to do and things like this. So he probably, holds all that in and then he brings his frustrations home. That's background. Lately, let me also point out, Kathy, I think your suggestion over the summer was, we go to him and tell him at a time when his lid isn't full to say, hey, we know that you know what the right thing to do is, and we know you can do it, and give him these pep talks. I've done that, and there was one time where I'm laying with him in bed, and I say this, and he actually, in the middle of my giving him this pep talk, he's starting to, kick, and all this. So he was reacting negatively even to the positive pep talk. Anyway, so that's the background. Lately, he's been lying. He'll do, most of the time it would be something where he's doing it to, doing something to his twin brother, and his brother will, tell on him. So some things I will know, even from the other room, I know that what my other son is saying is true. And so he'll be, and sometimes he's literally caught, like last night he was caught hitting his brother with a paper sword, in the head. And we're like, hey, why, there's no hitting in this house, Okay, so stuff like that. He will first deny it, mm-hmm. especially if we're not in the room. But even if we were, we saw him, he'll first deny it, and then he might laugh. And then when we kind of press on with it and say, hey, we know that this happened, and he'll eventually yell and scream and melt down and call us mean mm-hmm. for having mm-hmm. kind of pointed something out that he's done, right? Mm-hmm. So that has been lying. I mean, that has been happening a lot lately. And then the other thing I want to add in here is that the whole self-control, I'm sensing that he's feeling, he has used this word on himself. He's saying, I'm bad, because he's still having a skiing accident. And I'm going to call the pediatrician today to see if we can see a urologist. So it could be something. And I've told him lately, I don't get mad or anything. I just say, it's okay. Because it could be something physically going on. We're gonna go get it checked out.
Right.
We never say the word "you're bad" or anything to any of our kids. And he has said this about himself. Each time he has an accident, now he says, "I'm bad. I'm bad." So I have a feeling he's equating lack of self-control with bad.
Yeah.
Right. Himself. But and I know I asked about self-compassion last time. So we're just kind of at a loss as to how to deal with him, especially with the lying, when it very clearly lied and we kind of want to set boundaries and consequences, consequences that make sense. But then many of these times, I don't know what even the consequence might be. And he is also being openly defiant. Like we will ask him to do something and ask him again, and then he just won't listen. Well, sometimes he just is not listening, and then we're like, once he's got his attention, he's like, nope, I don't want to do it. So those are all the things that we are having trouble with.
Awesome. Okay, I'm gonna bring Tim in. Hey Tim, is there anything you want to add before we jump in?
Yeah, two cents worth. You know, I think first of all, I think the being above the line is mostly to Millie's credit, and she's trying to coach me vicariously through you guys. But I'm the one that gets frustrated, and grew up in a very disciplined household, and so I get frustrated when Oliver's, you know, acting out. And I also kind of lately do really feel like he's really struggling with his lack of impulse control, and is equating it, especially given the light that he's got a twin brother who has more self-control than I do. So he's, I think, comparing himself to somebody that shows a lot of self-control and wonders maybe why he doesn't have it, that, you know, feeling a little bit crazy or something. But so trying to empathize with that. But where it leads is this reaction of his that when we do try to point out, like, hey, you know, we don't hit people in the head with paper swords because, you know, you could hurt their eye. Like, I didn't do it. And then when you kind of remind them, like, well, I was just actually standing right here and saw you do that, then there's this meltdown. So what we end up doing is then time there's, you know, an attempt to try to guide him and show consequences for actions, we're walking on eggshells around him. And so then I think he is then taking that to be, you know, running stud with us and kind of just having, you know, knowing that if I'm ever called on anything, all I got to do is melt down and then I'll get my way. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of again wrestling with what are natural consequences? How do we respond when he melts down in a positive way, but, you know, also try to not tear down if he is having confidence problems.
Hmm. Okay.
Good questions.
Really good questions. And I don't know, I feel like, I think Kathy's going to talk a lot about 7-year-old and brain development and all that, but you guys talked about above the line, below the line. For those guys who don't remember, above the line is when you're open, you're curious, you're willing to learn. Below the line is when you're closed, defensive, and you want to be right. So Tim, you, so the idea is not always to respond from above the line, because 90% of us live 90% of our time below the line. The thing to focus on, and it sounds like, you know, you blessed Millie because she's a little bit better at this, probably because she's been practicing it more. But the goal is not to be above the line. The goal is to be able to locate yourself. So I just want to kind of remind you that it's not about always responding with love and compassion and all that. It's catching yourself before you actually do react. And instead, it's too much of a leap to go like, okay, I'm going to go from below to above in a second like that. What I do when I realize and I locate myself that I'm about to get mad at my daughter because she's been on Netflix for too long, I actually just remove myself. So if maybe the baby step way of leaning into going from below to above is be able to be mindful enough to locate where you are, because that's really the goal. The goal is not to be above. The goal is to locate yourself. And when you do, I don't want to say this because this is coming from a place of scarcity, but it's a really big ask to be able to go from below to respond with love and compassion in a single moment. So maybe when you find yourself in those moments where you are below, instead of responding with love and compassion, which would be great, just remove yourself and not respond at all. And I know that's hard to do because if you're the only one home and Millie's not around to kind of like tag out, because Kathy and I do a lot of tagging, like, you know what, I don't have the energy for this, I need you to do it. So that's my initial thoughts about it. And just the fact that you're aware of above and below and mindfulness and presence is like half the battle. So you're at least aware of it. So keep working on that. And we all need to keep working on it, including me. So to get more into the specifics, I'm going to let Kathy talk about Oliver. And the one kind of like segue to it is like, oh my God, your 7-year-old is lying? Like, That's what 7-year-olds are supposed to do.
Well, some, not all. Like, they have twins, and right, one is not. So it's not that all. But I guess what I think Todd's trying to say is there is a version of normalcy here, that your 7-year-old is not the first to lie. And lying, there is a reason why kids lie. It's not because they are trying to be bad kids. It's not because they are becoming psychopaths. It's because they're fearful of what occurs if they don't lie. That doesn't mean that they're fairly afraid of you. It's not like my mom and dad will really come down on me. Sometimes it's what they will feel about themselves. Mm-hmm. Okay. We all have a little bit of like, it's easier to tell a white lie so I don't have to feel like, this is a dumb example, but she's just coming into my mind. Like, I have a girlfriend, she happens to be on Team Zen, so maybe she'll listen to this, who used to constantly tell our professors that her grandfather had died, and that's why she didn't turn something in.
She had a lot of grandpas.
She had a lot of grandpas. They, you know, a lot of grandpas are no longer with us. And she just didn't want to deal with the fact she didn't write her paper. Do you see what I mean? Like, she just didn't want to deal with the conversation. There's a lot of reasons. I'm only using that because adults do it too. Yeah. I want to go back though and talk about a few things. I love the fact that you are going to get him physically checked out, because there are sometimes physical issues when it comes to being able to have bladder control. That is not always, and again, it can just be like for now, meaning developmentally where they are right now, developmentally, physically, it's just too difficult. You know, we actually know someone really well who, I don't remember what year that was, but when she finally, maybe like 9 or 10, mm-hmm. and I guess my point is then physically her body was able to do it over time, but she just had a different system. So that's number one. I love that you're going to do that.
But can it also be like the emotional?
Of course. Right. But that's like the next thing. First, you got to deal with the physical. Mm-hmm. If there isn't a physical component, it, you know, all things around going to the bathroom are about control emotionally. So it's one of the only things we have control over that is just ours. No one can do it for us, right? And no one can keep us from doing it when we want to do it. And no one can tell us we have to go until our body says we're going to go. So it's got a lot to do with control. And you guys are using this word a lot with him about his own self-control. And a lot of that, again, I'm saying this so we just have a good foundation here. A lot of that is completely appropriate at 7. He's just still, I know, because he lives in your home and you see him every day and you have a counterpart, you literally have a counterpart where it's different. There's a feeling like he should be able to do the same thing as him, but they're completely different people. And even though they share a lot of DNA, they're completely different people. And he is also, and you know, Tim, this will be helpful for you, because I think a lot of the feelings we have when our kids are melting down or, you know, using, and I'm putting this in air quotes, like using methods of getting out of things, we do go back to our own childhood and we think, I would have never gotten away with that, right? And I came from a disciplined childhood and this is ridiculous. And we get really lost in our own history. And not that our history doesn't matter, because it does, but when you go there, that's kind of taking you below the line. Think to yourself, yes, that was my childhood, but I'm in a different place in time. And all I have to deal with is the person in front of me. I don't need to deal with how my parents parented. I don't have to deal with myself. I don't have to deal with my daughter or my other twin. I'm just going to deal with this person in front of me, because he doesn't care how we were parented. Do you know what I mean? Like, he, even if we said,
right.
and we all do it, please know, Tim, because I know you're not on these calls a lot. Like, Todd and I do that too, where we'll be like, I would have never gotten away with, you know, we all come from our history. But the truth is, in the moment, you know, we just have to be with him. And one little thing is that he needs to know that it's not that he's out of control; it's that he's developing control. Can you hear the difference between those two things? Like, he really thinks there's something innately wrong with me. I am bad. My body, you know, I'm going to the bathroom in the middle of the night, or I get mad and I flail around on the floor. There is something deficient in me. And the switch that you guys can help him with is, you're developing it. You're learning it in real time. And we're right here with you. And lots of 7-year-olds, maybe not your brother, you know, but he'll have different things, you know, you're learning this. And he Does he have a character, like a movie character or a book character that he loves?
Character?
Or an action figure or a stuffed animal?
He loves tigers.
Perfect.
He loves tigers.
Think about a tiger. Tigers can be calm, and they only pounce when it's time, and they have all that, right? So help him, this is something that was given to me, so I'm going to try and share it best way I can. You know, if he loves tigers, be like, you know what? Start to, realize that tiger is part of you, too. And that you can start to pull in that energy of the tiger. And even if he has a tiger he loves or like a figurine, and if he doesn't have one, maybe get him one. And actually the person I worked with had me literally do this physically, take that tiger and bring him into your system, right? And that tiger lives inside of you. This is why this works, because then he can start to talk about the tiger versus himself. And he can, and if he's not disassociating in a scary way, he has a part of himself that he feels is out of control and that he doesn't like. And you're trying to bring in a part of him that he does like. And it's all the same. You know what I mean? It's all him. But you're trying to remind him that tiger lives inside of him, and that in the moment when he's maybe flailing, you know, it's not going to work to be like, tiger, bring in the tiger. But afterwards, when he's feeling bad, you can say, don't forget that tiger still lives in you, and he's working on it. He's developing that control, and it will come. You are practicing, you are learning, and your dad and I, or your mom and I, were supporting you in doing that. It's hard sometimes. Sometimes we get mad. Sometimes it's difficult, but that doesn't mean it's not worthy. Think of the tiger. The tiger doesn't stop. You know, the tiger always learns. So you're trying to give him another, sometimes when we're hard on ourselves, we need to bring out another part of ourselves that we can love, to start to balance out those parts that we don't like. Does that make sense?
It's perfect. I love the addition of a tiger. Yeah, yeah.
Good.
I'm sure you guys have a follow-up. What are your thoughts? Good, bad, or otherwise?
I think it's good. I mean, he also loves little stuffy animals, so I don't know if he already has a stuffy tiger, but if not, we can get him run, and it can be a quick way of diverting the attention, like you say, and getting him to focus on what he, you know, is capable of doing. So,
and use the other stuffies that are maybe more like nurturing, like the tiger has a lot of power, like control, right? Yeah. But the other stuffies, maybe a teddy bear or something, that can be the nurturing part. Don't forget about bringing in that teddy bear energy. That teddy bear lives in you too, and your teddy bear can love. And can love you. And don't ever, you know, when you sleep with them, don't forget that they're part of you. And it's the truth. Like, I would say this to you guys as adults. I'm doing it as a 48-year-old. We're not feeding them stories. We all have parts of ourselves, and we can call them the nurturing part and the control part, or we can call it tiger and teddy bear. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's just words.
And let me interrupt. So Kathy uses, she just kind of brought this tiger stuffed animal thing. I think of archetypes just because I read a book one time on archetypes, and there's four archetypes, at least the book that I read: king, warrior, magician, lover. And the king is kind of the all-knowing. The warrior is the kind of the one that controls and does things and goes all out. The lover is the soft, nurturing part, and the magician is when you're in your head and you're trying to figure everything out in your head. So this isn't for Oliver, but this is, I guess, for Millie and Tim. There's times when our warrior shows up at a time when our lover needs to show up. Mm-hmm. And there's times when our magician shows up when our warrior needs to show up. And warrior doesn't mean that you conquer. Warrior means
firm.
You stand firm. So you stand up. Instead of fight against, you stand up. And
before you move on, and firm doesn't mean, for everybody involved, firm doesn't mean you crack the whip. Firm means I am going to with you while you struggle.
Yes.
And I am here with you. Warrior energy doesn't mean overpowering. It means using your power in a way that's healthy.
To Kathy's point, maybe the warrior energy is right now I want to scream at this kid, and it's going to take your warrior energy to sit here and ask permission. Can I sit here while Oliver, while you are struggling right now, do you mind if I just sit in your presence? And they might say, no, leave the room, or they might be out of control. But it sometimes it takes your warrior energy just to sit in that discomfort. One other kind of bit of advice that is sometimes whenever it's given to me, it kind of drives me nuts.
So he's going to share it.
So I'm going to share it with you guys. What is Oliver here to teach you guys?
Yeah, man.
He showed up for a reason. And as much as we want to, at certain times, make our kids into little robots, he is here to teach you. Maybe it's loving somebody who's not showing a lot of love right now.
Maybe it's someone who's so different than ourselves.
Right.
So different than us.
And that's heavy lifting, but we could do it, and you're not going to always be able to do it. Yeah. So anyways,
the other thing I wanted to point out that I love that you pointed out is here we have this experiment, literally 2 7-year-olds, right? Oliver, okay, maybe this is the average, whatever. Oliver may be this way, and Aaron happens to be this way because he's actually a very kind of an old soul.
Yes.
And so he's not even as normal, you know?
Yeah.
And so because they're so different, that is also something – thank you for pointing out that we need to point out to him to say, yes. but Aaron does also have challenging things, and we can
sure.
point that out. Like, you know, he has struggles with this, and you know, so yeah, but having those two to come, not that we try to compare them, because I really try not to, but yeah, having them as, literally an experiment, you know, because you can see exact same age, 2 minutes apart, and they're so different.
Yeah.
Yes. It's so interesting for you guys as parents to watch that. And you two are probably the greatest spokespeople for how no children are the same. You know what I mean? Like that sometimes, you know, we keep trying to raise, you know, someone will have 4 kids and they're trying to raise them all the exact same way. It's like saying I have 4 friends and I'm going to treat them the exact same way. And even if they need this, I'm going to give them this. All of our kids are different humans. Mm. And they, even if they're twins, like you guys are a perfect example of that. Like they're just different humans.
Are they identical or paternal?
No, fraternal.
Oh, sorry. Is it fraternal?
Fraternal.
I thought it was paternal. I'm going to bring Dawn in, even though she doesn't know it. Hey, Dawn, you wrote something in the comments. Will you share?
Sure. Millie, I was in, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I was in the middle of about to post this for the group, but I'll just read it. Something that you said actually reminded me of a book that I was reading and had put down, but it kind of connected something for me when you said that your son, despite your best efforts to make sure that he understands he's not bad, he still somehow has internalized that message. It made me understand how. Anyway, let me just read this. This made me understand why he internalized the message, which has nothing to do with you. Since Plato's time, self-control has been celebrated as a measure of character. Mm. This assumption has profoundly shaped how we think about children and how they develop into adults of sound mind, body, and character. For adults, too, the assumption has been that willpower is essential to resist temptation and to persevere through challenge and adversity. What the classical philosophers and the generations that followed them didn't know is that something much more basic is at work. So there's a bunch more that I was gonna take a picture of it and post it. But my point is that it's our culture to that belief that we're bad if we don't have self-control. Mm-hmm. So our kids would have to be in a bubble for them not to have absorbed that. And, you know, Team Zen, I mean, we're here to try to break through that. But that just really, I was like, oh, I get it now. It's everywhere. That's why they pick these things up despite our best efforts. And we have to keep reminding them that it's okay.
Thank you.
That's all.
And to add what Dawn is saying, parts that you're going to look, in 10 years, you're going to look back at Oliver as a 7-year-old and you'll be like, yeah,
it all makes sense.
Of course. Yeah. Like this, of course. And this part of him is what's going to make him great. So the job is for you not to shut it down, but just to kind of shape it in a way.
Help him.
Yeah.
Help him hold it as he go, you know, like that's why giving him another space where he's got all these like animals or critters or tigers or whatever supporting him. So he knows he's never alone. And that even the tiger's still learning. Mm-hmm. Like he's developing. Like, he's not supposed to, because there is, I like that you shared that, Dawn, and, you know, just talking about our kids and self-control, and we really do, we'll say things like, wow, my child got a vaccine, and they didn't even cry. They're so tough. And we don't want our children to be shut down and controlled, because then they become 30 and 40-something year olds who can't feel anything. And they're like, I don't feel joy in my life. I shut myself down. Like, there's a very fine line between self-control and numbing out. And I'm saying it's a fine line because there is a difference. I mean, self-control is regulation, right? It's emotional regulation where you say, I am mad, but I'm not going to make that choice. That's healthy. But shutting down or numbness is, I don't even know what I'm feeling. I'm going to not feel anything, and I'm going to pretend nothing's going on, and I'm going to work harder, and I'm going to sleep more, and I'm going to vape, and I'm going to, you know what I mean? There's like a very fine line between those two. So talking to our kids about, you're going to be developing this your whole lifetime, and we're right there with you. And so are we, you know?
So Tim has to sign off. Tim, you got to sign off in 1 minute. Any last thoughts before you bail?
No, it's been very helpful. I think, again, helping him realize that he is his own person and this is just who he is, and to, you know, let's celebrate that. And I like the comment about self-control being something that's overvalued in our society, and I can definitely see myself in that. And that, you know, this is a part of this is for Oliver to teach us how to become more whole people and celebrate who we are. So it helps to look at it through that lens, I think.
Wonderful.
Beautiful.
Well, I'm so glad
thanks,
you joined us, Tim, and you're welcome to come back whenever you want.
Yeah, whenever.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Millie, any closing thoughts before we move on?
No, but I think you have now hooked him in. No, we'll re-listen to this, and I was typing notes like frantically, but yeah, no, I love what you've just ding, like the tiger, that whole different personas in us. I feel like I've read this in books and things where, you know, we just have all different kinds in us. So I love stuffies and maybe just, you know, having a little party with them and explaining that we're all these, you know.
That's right.
So
maybe you do it with him. Maybe you get your own, you know, figurines or little stuffed animals. That way he doesn't feel like he's special in a bad way. Say, hey, mommy's doing this too. Just an idea.
Yeah, Go ahead.
Inside out characters. Yes. Those too, you know, that, but I kind of like having just random animals because he loves, animals. So yeah, that's a good idea that I should have my own tigers and bears.
Yeah. And Millie, I don't know if he likes science or understand or has any desire to know this, but remind him that we share basically 99% of the same DNA as a tiger. Like we're really not that different from animals. You know, we have like, so not only are we giving him the stuffy and the words and the understanding, but then do you realize how similar we are to all these animals you love? Like we're not separate. And then, you know, then I'm jumping ahead, but then he takes that in and think about the kind of children we raise where they realize, wow, that tiger is like me and that, you know, tree is like me. And, you know, it's deeper than we think it is.
Well, and it's funny whenever I see like, you know, you watch PBS and you see a nature channel and you just see a mom caring for its young, whether it's a tiger or a chimp or any other animal, you're like, it's just a mom.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not mention that the tigers eat their male tigers eat their young.
And there are pieces. We are evolved. You know, we have the brains to be evolved. We can't like, you know, be mad at the tiger for still being in a survival of the fittest mode, you know, but
okay, I'm going to mute Millie, and I'm going to read a question, and then I think we're going to go over to Nikki afterwards, if the timing works out. My husband has a great relationship with our 9-year-old daughter. He's Mr. Taxi and is really proactive about organizing homework and extracurricular stuff. There are times, though, when I think he's a bit too engaged. He always says our homework, like it's somehow his homework, too. I'm also concerned about the change in relationship that puberty will bring. How do I get him to take self-care more seriously to buffer himself in the case where silly play is less appreciated and he needs to adapt his approach? Am I being overly negative? So my two cents on the answer to this question is, I would say pump the brakes a little bit. Let's parent from the present moment.
Who pumped the brakes?
This listener, this okay. questioner.
So not the dad.
No, okay. no, not the dad. Like, let's, I understand why you want to like get ahead of the problem. That way you can kind of like shape it if it were to show up, but it may not show up. And, you know, she's nine. I know puberty happens earlier and earlier these days, but I would allow this to transpire organically. And if some assertiveness needs to happen and there is some, you know, I don't know, boundaries that need to be placed on, but I don't know. I feel like she's ahead of schedule.
Well, there's two questions in here. The simple one about him being engaged is amazing. The one about him saying things like our homework, you could at a time, even don't even say it's from you, say like you heard it on a podcast or in a book, that saying our or we takes away their ability to own their own stuff. And that, you know, you just want to point it out. He's going to maybe still occasionally say our, but you just want to have a conversation about how maybe words can make a difference. That's fine. But the other part about puberty and worrying about it, don't. Like, this is exactly what a nine-year-old should be doing with her dad, mm-hmm. is being super engaged and super connected, and he picks her up and they have fun. And one of my favorite dads to follow, besides my husband, who's an amazing father, is Rob Bell and his daughter. They have the funniest relationship, and they like drive all over LA to find like 7-Elevens where they can get like crazy chips. Mm-hmm. And then they like, you know, will drive too late at night, and then they'll have to sleep and wake up the next, like,
yeah, some mild rule breaking.
Sure.
Yeah,
and
some fun.
And that's what you're building. What your husband is building with your daughter is a foundation for her development. Then when she goes through puberty, or when she starts to, her peers are going to become more important. That, I mean, puberty, body changes are one thing, but what really happens during that age is children need to individuate from us. And they need, it's like I always say this, at 3 years old and at 13 years old, separation, individuation needs to take place. It's completely child developmentally appropriate, and they'll do it. Like, it's not like something we have to prepare for or plan for. What we do need to plan for is that we're going to allow it. That, I mean, if we aren't aware that that's developmentally appropriate, we may say things like, where are you going? Why do you want to be with your friends and not me? That's this, they're supposed to separate. If they don't, how will they ever leave us? If we become their best friends for life, how are they ever going to go out and fly? Like, we are their support system and their roots. And then we give them a platform to go live. And every time they come back, we say, you're welcome to be here. And we say, I believe in you. And they go back out, and then they come back and we say, you're welcome to be here. And I don't mean necessarily in our house if you've got a 30-year-old. I mean like emotionally. And so allow that relationship to be exactly what it is. And I know you're trying to think ahead, but I don't think it's helpful. I think you're just worrying yourself, and you may like cause a relationship that's really healthy to go off the rails before it needs to. I think a lot of times we do things because we're like, I don't want to feel disappointment or pain later. We can't avoid it. You know, it's kind of like, I thought, cause you know, it's an example of grief, but you know, my dad was sick for so long and I grieved for so long that I thought, you know, by the time he's not here anymore, I will have grieved so much that it will be just, you know, I'll be more accepting. It was still horrible and hard. And that is just the way it is, meaning that we don't get to jump over things. We don't get to say, I'm going to get prepared for when they're 13 now. You just have to enjoy nine.
Yeah, stay at nine.
And then when you get to 13, it may not be that bad. I did not have, I mean, again, you're the dad, so you would have to share your change, but I've enjoyed, and I'm not saying because it's easy. I'm not trying to say, oh, I've done everything correctly. I'm saying I've enjoyed my girls' development.
Well, there was a natural pulling away from each of my three daughters. Not to say I don't still physically touch them and rub their feet and give them kisses on the forehead and give them hugs, but you know, compared to when they were 7 or 8, it's a lot different, but it's a natural progression.
You also used to put them on your shoulders and blah blah blah, and they think you can't do that anymore.
Yeah. So I carried Skylar to bed last night. She's 12, and I gotta work out harder because it's getting really difficult to carry her. JC's as big as I am. Oh, she's not as big as I am, but
no, she's forget short. About it.
I know, but they're just, these kids.
Well, they're adults. They get bigger. She's almost 17. Yeah. Like, and the thing that when she's like, Mom, I'm going to go to school and then I got to work and then I'm going out with my friends. The question I ask is, are you tired? Do you need something to eat? What do you need from me? Do you have gas in the car? And she's like, yes, 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 yes. I'm like, okay, have fun. Like I'm her foundation. I am not like, no, stay home and watch a movie with me. Like she needs to go do her life. But when she said on Sunday, cause she's like, no, I'm going to stay home all day. I was like,
sweet.
Yay.
Cause it doesn't happen anymore.
But I enjoy that without making her feel guilty. That's
all right. We're heading over to Nikki. Hi, Nikki.
Hi. That was quite a great segue, actually. This Thursday, my husband and I just went, oh my gosh, we've just hit the second phase of teenage-dom with our daughter. And we feel completely unprepared and we feel like we haven't had anywhere near enough conversations as a couple or with our daughter or anything. So I just feel like I need to immerse myself in how to be a Zen parent of a nearly 15-year-old because Craig and I both felt that our childhood stories came up rather than is this the type of parents we want to be? And so she, in totality, her weekend was amazing. It's like what you just talked about. Of Thursday night, she went to the mall with her girlfriend to find shoes for a ball, and they came back with a boy. We've never had a boy in our house in our life, and I don't know how the boy was attached, but he was there suddenly, and they wanted to hang out in her room, and both my husband and I are like, there's no boys in rooms, and you know, but we just went with it because we were in shock because we've never seen a boy in our house. And then they went to the beach together as a group, and it was a youth group crowd, but it's just a group of kids. And then they went back to a friend's house, and the friend's house is, you know how there's always a house that it's a bit of a party house? It's the bottom room, and it's got, it's her bedroom down there, but it's a TV and a couch, and it's got an outdoor access, and they're all in there. And when I came to pick her up, the door was locked, and they said, just a moment, please. And you're just like, oh, things like that. There were no boys there, but there was an incense smell in there. You know, and then the next day she did this whole cheerleading thing with all a group of friends, and then we went to a family party. So she had a really cool weekend. And it's the weekend I want for her, and it's appropriate for her. But I feel completely unprepared in terms of that. I've got a lot of fears about it, and I'm trying to. It's like, what does it mean to be a Zen parent of a 15 to 18-year-old? Mm-hmm. And what resources could I draw on? I've read John Duffy's two books, and I've read the Learning to Thrive book, which all three I've loved. But, yeah, just any thoughts of how you've navigated this?
Sure.
I think, Nikki, you are more prepared than you think you are, for one thing. She's shaking her head no. You've already read both of Duffy's books. We've done some podcasts with we did a podcast specifically where Dan Siegel was talking to Family Action Network, and we talked about the teenage brain. It's when he was promoting his teenage brain book. Millie, if you could do a quick search on Dan Siegel teenage brain, that is a resource that I would invite you. You can also on the podcast archive page of our website, just type in teenagers. And there's probably a few podcasts where we speak specifically about that. So that's more of a formal way of informing yourself about these things. But, you know, the idea of being a Zen parent, I don't think there is such a thing. It's, for me, Zen parenting is, you know, bless yourself after you screw something up.
Because and locate yourself.
Locate yourself. When you do screw it up, learn from it and keep moving on. And you're going to keep screwing up. And it's funny, you're like, your daughter had the weekend that she wanted to have, but you're like, we just weren't prepared. So really, this is all about you. It has very little, and I know you're saying that, it has very little to do with your daughter. So I feel the same way as you. Like, this is freaking tricky stuff. So,
well, anyways. And I think that what you said is true. And I think allow that. What it's bringing up in you is your teenage years, right? Because that's what happens when our kids are 5. We remember kindergarten. When our kids are 10, we remember, oh, middle school was rough. And then now they're teenagers and you're remembering what was available and what was out there and the feelings you were having. And believe me, your children are having the same feelings and things are out there. That's okay. That's not something we're going to stop. It's not something we're going to put a wall around them and say, you can't go out and have experiences. You know, as Dory says in, you know, Finding Nemo, if nothing happens to them, then nothing happens to them. Like, I know, and I don't mean they need to have a horrible experience. It just experience. Like, and my, what I say to the girls, And I'm learning right side with you. Like, I still do therapy to talk about my times at being 12 and 15. Like, I'm not done. But what I know is that there are certain, like, let me just start very specifically. Your daughter, you had the first experience with a boy coming over and they went to her room. If you're like, you know, we're not cool with that, then you can say to her, it looks like you're finding new friends. Maybe some guys are going to be in the house. Just so you know, you guys are welcome in the basement, in the family room, wherever, but not in the bedrooms. It's just a rule. Ours is easy because the bedrooms are upstairs. So when guys are over here, when boys are over here, even like for our daughter, JC, she's got a ton of guy friends, but it's the same rule. It's just like, even if you're not dating these people, just not in the bedrooms, but they're welcome to be downstairs.
Or no closing doors. I mean, you gotta, and every parent has to figure out for themselves. Like, what's the difference between no going upstairs and no closing doors?
It's an easier line of that. And that's why I said it's easier, because it's upstairs. Your bedroom is your personal space. And there is, and again, our children are not dumb. We don't need to be like, I don't know. Like, there are limits. Like, it's just kind of like Oliver being 7. You are developing new experiences. You are developing new desires. You are developing new wants and needs. That's totally not a problem. But your bedroom with boys in it is not part of that experience. Like, that's not going to be, there are some lines. And you don't have to be mad about it. You don't have to say, now listen, you just say, now the boys are coming over, I want you to know what the rules are in the house. Maybe don't use the word rules. If you're raising a rebel, use the word expectations or whatever. But what I would also say is be conscious of what you're afraid of without imposing it on them, because they're not, even though they're having similar desires and needs and everything, they're not having your experiences. So if you say to yourself, well, I was at a party once and people were drinking and then people got in trouble and they got arrested, that's going to happen to my daughter. You're making up a story. That was your experience. What I would talk to her about, and I know this might be surprising for some of you who parent differently, but that's okay. I have talked to my daughter about being at parties where there's alcohol, and if she feels a lot of pressure, hold a cup and walk around with a cup. Just do something to get people off your back. I have told her, she has a big party with her work friends, and they're all older than her, and she's got a girl driving her. And I said, when you're there, if you notice that, you know, I won't say her name, but if you notice she's drinking, text me and say, come pick me up. Not early necessarily, but I will drive you home. So I'm not saying don't go to a party with no drinking. I'm saying I'm here. I've talked to them about edibles. I've talked to them in Illinois, marijuana is going to be legal in 1 month. So I'm an idiot if I don't say to my kids, here's what can happen. When, you know, edibles can be stronger than you think they are. It's not keeping it from them. It's talking to them about it. So Nikki, maybe that's the part that you're like, you need to get prepared for, is you need to sit, you and your husband, and say, what are we going to say about this? What do we believe about alcohol and vaping and drugs? What do we think about sex? What are our desires for our kids so we can teach in alignment with that? Because I don't want my children to hide from life. I want them to be able to navigate difficult situations.
And those discussions need to happen on the fly. If you sit there across the table saying, we're going to have a talk about sex or drugs or whatever, most kids are going to shut down.
Just do one at a time.
One at a time while you're making lunches or you're watching a show or there's a beer commercial on, whatever it is, just build it into everyday conversation, because, you know, I think a lot of people that our age is like, all right, it's time for us to have the big talk.
And then they get a piece of paper and they say, here's how I feel. Like the conversation I had with my daughter about marijuana is, I said, JC, do you know that in 1 month, weed is going to be legal in Illinois? She goes, I know, I'm so excited. I was like, wait. And I bring in humor. I'm like, wait, what do you mean you're excited? She's like, Mom, I'm just kidding. I said, well, as long as we're having this conversation, edibles are super strong. And if somebody, and she's like, yeah. But I'm not going to avoid these conversations. And we use a lot of humor in this house, and I'm not stupid. I know, should I say it again? Marijuana is going to be legal. Like, I can't combat that, because I used to use the law, you know, and be like, it's illegal. It's an illegal drug. It is not. So she's got to figure out how to navigate it.
And the more chill, and it's not what you say, it's how you say it. The more chill you can be with bringing it up, the easier it is for them to give you an authentic, honest discussion. Nikki, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, there was two things. One, Becky's best friend identifies as bisexual. So it's just this awkward thing if we let her in Becky's room.
Right.
So what's the difference?
Same with our girls. Like they, you know, they have their own sexual preferences, and they have, you know, friends who are gay and bisexual. And it does get a little dicey where it's like, who's attracted to who? And that's a great conversation in itself. Like, Nikki, here's how like flexible this is. Your daughter might say, Mom, that doesn't make sense for this or that or this or that. And you're like, okay, well, how can't, you know, like maybe the bedroom rule doesn't work in your house. Like, I'm not saying you have to do that. I'm saying that's a good starting point. And then your daughter, it's not about she's going to manipulate you out of it. It's how can we have a conversation about what makes sense? Like one of my daughters or one of my best friend's daughters just posted something on Instagram the other day that looked really, really inappropriate to people my age. Okay. But her daughter, who a lot of people contacted and said, what the hell are you putting on Instagram? Was like, this is not inappropriate for my age. And I showed my daughters and they're like,
it's not a big deal.
It's not a big deal.
And Kathy and I saw it. We're like, it's kind of a big deal.
And my girls are like, Mom, it's not. Like, and so now what I talked to the mom about, who happens to be one of my best friends, is you need to explain to her why it's a big deal to Gen X. And you need to listen to her why it's not a big deal to Gen Z. And you can kind of come to a meeting place of understanding that right now on Instagram, she is attached to her grandmother, me, aunts, uncles, and that maybe that's not great for there. But in Snapchat, it is. So you're not saying be different, be like me. You're saying, here's how I see it. How do you see it? So that's the conversation. Like, you can start with, let's just do basement rather than bedrooms. And if your daughter's like, Mom, you know, that doesn't make sense to me, have the conversation.
And here's the word that keeps coming to me, whether we're talking about Millie's son or Nikki's daughter, ally. You need to be an ally. And us, a lot of parents, probably not a lot of Team Zen parents, but they think that their job is to always be teaching and guiding and disciplining. And for Kathy and I, we really try to just make sure that these girls know that we're on their team.
All the time. Yeah. Even when they have, you know, a day where Todd and I are like, woo, you know, like, it's not like, wow. And we try and like, one of my daughters had a really tough day a couple weeks ago, and I continue talking about that, meaning like the next day it's like, how are you feeling? And what were you, I don't want to give those words because it comes off condescending, you know, like I'll allow that day to live and breathe instead of pretend it didn't happen. Like a couple days later, I might be like, remember how you felt that morning? Like, is there anything I can do the night before so the morning's not so intense? And then she gives, so we don't need to pretend certain things didn't happen. We don't need to shut down. We don't need to like live like this where it's like, let's walk on eggshells around this. Like that happened. We all have outbursts. We have darkness. And can we accept that? And someone asked a question that I wanted to answer about sometimes when we talk to our kids, like we want to have conversations with them and our children shut us down. Instead of talking at them or saying, I want to talk to you about something, talk about yourself. here's something, you know, be conversational. Instead of, I always say to Todd, I can tell the girls are shutting down when he's talking to them because I can tell he needs something from them.
And I need to make sure that I'm teaching them so that I feel good about myself.
Exactly. And I'll say, what you're trying to say to them is really valuable, but I can feel your need. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like, let's have a discussion. And what's your point of view on this? And I'm like,
like a teacher at school.
And so for,
and Kathy comes down to their level and talks to them as if
they're my best friend.
They're your best friend.
And they're not my best friend. They're my children, but I'm not talking to them any differently than I talk to Manisha or Lara or Todd or you guys. Like, just like, don't eat too many edibles, dude. You know, like that's.
I wasn't sure with that shut door in that room and the sweet smell.
Yeah.
And the time it took to open that door.
Yeah.
I don't know how to raise it without it being a shutdown. Like if I said, was vaping happening or what was going on with, you know, I felt like there was no way of asking without her just shutting it down because she doesn't want to get someone in trouble or create a thing.
Well, Nikki, what if you said,
I feel like I'm a cop out not bringing it up. I feel like I'm not doing my parenting.
Mm-hmm. What if you say, when I was your age and we used to smoke cigarettes or we used to smoke weed, you know, it was a totally different thing. The way that we would cover it up is we would light incense. And I totally smelled incense outside that door. Is that like the same thing with you guys? So then you're talking about yourself. Like if we pretend we had no experiences in our teenage years, if we pretend that we never made a mistake and that we were like straight as an arrow. And you know what? I do have a girlfriend who was straight as an arrow. Rita.
Yes.
So she's a hard one with me because she's like, I didn't do anything like that.
That's Rita. She's at the conference every
year. Yeah, Rita Hyland, my friend who's a life coach. You guys might know her. She's always like, I didn't do any of that, Kathy. I'm like, ah. But if we can talk to, or you can say, I had some friends who would burn incense. And so instead of being...
Because if you start saying, I know you're doing it,
right.
You don't know. But let's just say your daughter's friends just start smoking weed all the time. Kids are clever, but they're not that clever. And you will find out. And when you find out, if they do it, you'll figure it out. But to kind of dig for something that may or may not be there, it will show up.
And you can just say it without, because if you're like, my daughter may not share with me because she'll get in trouble. My question to you, Nikki, is will she? Mm-hmm. Because if she will get in trouble, then that's why she's not telling you.
Right.
But if you are saying to her, if you try something or if something is available to you and you want to talk to me about it, I'm here. And then she comes to you and you talk to her about it and you have a good conversation, then she'll continue. Ooh, this is good. So Kim just typed, we talk about how to experiment safely and that we always have their back if they get in trouble.
Drop the mic.
And I know for some that's so uncomfortable, you guys, I get it. But you, and you may have, if you have two or three kids, you may have one kid who experiments with nothing. You know, I know those people. And you may have some kids who experiment with everything. But what you're trying to say is, I'm aware that this is where we are. Like, and I think it's just because I'm so exposed to it, because I'm with teenagers and I talk to fifth graders and eighth graders all the time. And it's there. They're seeing it.
And Kim says it leads to good conversations about their friends.
About their friends.
Yep.
And allow for the friends' conversations when they're like, well, I don't, but my friend, okay, don't say which friend.
Yeah.
What's their name?
Forget it.
And who cares?
Then you're slamming the door on the conversation.
Right. Just say, and I feel like most of my conversations with JC are about her friends. And sometimes I really do think it is about her friends, but I'm sure there's occasions where she gets information that she needs.
And Kathy and I speculate, like, what do you think JC's done? Honestly, we don't really know yet.
I don't know. Well, that's not true. I mean, there's some things that I'm aware of and I know what she's been exposed to, but I also think I don't know everything.
Right.
I don't want to.
Right.
Like, I don't want to be at the party. Yeah. Like, but I, you know, and again, something my friend and I talked about the other night and is that my generation, and this may not be true for you guys, but where I lived and where I came from, everything started earlier than it does now. And I know that may not be the same with you guys, but it was for me, man. Things were in middle school, things were, I was exposed to all of it. And my daughters, you know, it was much older.
And a quick point about this generation versus when we were younger, what this generation does more of is they smoke more weed and they're on screens more. What they also do is not drink and drive nearly as much. They actually don't drink as much. Mm-hmm. They're actually more philanthropic than we ever were. They're actually more socially conscious than
more
we were.
More self-care based.
It's an amazing, and you know, 30 years from now, it's going to be a whole different story about a whole different generation. But you know, what I always get triggered when they're like, oh, kids aren't the same these days. No, they're
not. Of course not.
And they're not supposed to be. And they're freaking collectively good people trying to navigate through their world in a very tricky time. And just bless them. You know, John Duffy always says, is like, I never met a teenager that I didn't like.
Same.
And he deals with a lot of troubled teenagers. All right, we're going to go to Dawn before we close shop. Hi, Dawn.
Hi. Real quick, if anyone didn't see CBS's Sunday Morning, they had a commentary called OK Boomer at the end, and I loved it. It was so positive about those kids, so I love that. Look that up. You'll love it. I had an insight personally that when you were talking about not having these conversations like in this big heavy sit down and just while you're washing the dishes, or so that concept is like just planting seeds, right? Rather than doing a massive info dump. And the insight that I got in myself is that I was raised with info dumps. Mm-hmm. Big ones. what I'm about to say is my personal experience with religion. It's not, you know, across the board, but for me, my experience was that concepts were delivered top down. They were lectures, they were sermons. It was delivered from leadership down. And then that was delivered down within discipleship groups. And you were on the listening end of it. There was no collaboration. You were expected to absorb these concepts and get them and implement them immediately. There was no space for planting a seed and letting somebody develop into a concept on their own timeline. No. You were expected to hop to it like yesterday. So part of the thing that I've been realizing is that I naturally, the way that my brain works is that I go down rabbit holes, and I go down rabbit holes deep. So I will hyper-focus on something. I will want to absorb a massive amount of information. And then the concept of planting seeds when I'm dealing with somebody else, I just want to go, blah, 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 blah. This is everything I learned from start to finish. And I want them to sit down with me and I want them to hear me from start to finish. And the idea of planting seeds is actually a struggle for me with my own executive function, because my brain can't hold information that long. It goes away. And so I'm also struggling against just my wiring in the concept of being able to plant seeds. So I learned that, and that's fine. I just need to know that about myself and come up with strategies rather than saying, well, then everybody has to just sit and listen to my info dumps because that's not right either. Mm-hmm. And so what I realized was, planting seeds, and doing things in chunks, is more often than not the ethically, morally right thing to do. When I'm engulfed in something, I'm not thinking about others. That's kind of the social thinking curriculum. I did not have a voice growing up like I do now. I had big things to say, and I'm finally at a place in life where I have latitude to say them. But I am doing the same thing that was done to me if I don't make space for others' voices, make space for other people's seeds to grow. And I think for me, this is where the intersection of mindfulness and executive function coaching, I just started, I hired an executive function coach for myself, will be very helpful for me. And my mind's just really been chewing on this lately. So when you said the comment, I'm just seeing how this applies in all these different ways. And when you made the comment about having these little discussions, I'm like, oh, that's another example of planting seeds rather than an info dump. Mm-hmm. So that's all. I just wanted to say that was great. So thank you.
That's wonderful, Dawn. And
Dawn's been working.
I know. Jeez, I can tell. And Dawn, you know what I'll add to that, and you already said this, but I'll say it with these words. You said what was given to you was a lot of info dumps, and you, and some of it was, there was definitely a hierarchy to it and an expectation that had nothing to do with you. And what you've learned is you still absorb information that way, which is good. Like you like to take it all in, no problem with that. But what you've learned is that when you want to share with someone, it's not about giving information. It's about creating a conversation. I always tell my students, communication does not mean how you speak. It means how you listen. So you bring something to the table, Dawn, like your favorite part of the information, like the little piece that's like most fun. And then, like you said, you stop talking and see what comes back, because you might be surprised how much you really have retained. Or if you haven't retained it, maybe you weren't supposed to. I had a teacher who drove me crazy because I'd be sitting with her and I'd write notes and she'd say, stop, stop writing notes. If you don't retain it, you didn't need it. And I'd be like, oh, that made me so mad. And I don't 100% agree with that because I like to write, but there's a piece of that that's true, that maybe we should share a little, listen, share, listen, and maybe we go a little blank, and that's okay. So thank you for that.
All right, everybody. It's 1:03 p.m. So thank you for joining us. Thanks to Nikki and to Dawn, to everybody, but specifically the people who ask questions, mm-hmm. Millie and Tim and Nikki and Dawn.
Kim, for your input. Yeah. I think somebody else gave, Anita gave some input. Everybody who's here, just thank you. And Aaron shared some things. So thank you for just participating in all the different ways. You don't ever have to ask a question, just helping or giving a thought or just being present. Your energy is helpful. Do we have another Zen Talk before Christmas?
Yes.
Before the holidays?
I haven't planned it out yet, but yeah, we could have one more.
So we'll see you guys before our break, and we're looking forward to it. And if you have any questions before then, Facebook page, email.
And I saved all the links in the chat, and that'll be in the show notes. So the OK Boomer thing, the link to King Warrior Magician Lover, amongst other things. So the chat will all be in the post. So that's it.
And remember, edibles are strong.
Keep trucking, everybody. Adios.
Bye.